It is time for Lingua Franca now. Hi, I'm Maria Zylstra. Computers are machines that process information according to a set of directions they've been programmed to operate by, and their instructions are given in what's come to be known as computer language. There are thousands of such languages by now, invented specifically to tell computers whatever it is that they're supposed to do. But for the vast majority of us who are not programmers, about all we know about them is that the lowest common denominator of any of these languages is a bit. And that's a contraction of the term binary digit, which might be either 1 or 0. And then they're bundled together into groupings called bytes, which are collections of bits, kind of like how words are collections of letters. To tell us more, here on ABC Radio National's Lingua Franca today, is one of our in-house programmers, John Horner.
People love to tell you that in computing, everything is reduced to ones and zeros. That may be so for the work the computer actually does, but is not true of the languages people write computer programs in these days. If you could open up the code that makes a computer program, although you might not understand it, you would certainly see words that you'd recognize and understand. Words like read and write, open and close, if and when. You'd also see math symbols, things like plus and minus, the equal sign, and signs for greater than and less than. Computer languages are made up of three main parts: functions, operators, and control structures. Taking those one by one, the functions are like verbs, things it knows how to do, which might number only in the hundreds. For example, one fundamental thing programming languages have to do is open files and read the information in them. So, every programming language will have a command to open a file, which will probably consist of the word open itself, followed by some parentheses, inside which will be required information, like the name of the file. The operators in a language are a kind of conjunction, things like those greater than and less than signs, and they might be tests. Is one number bigger than another? Is one word longer than another? Does this sentence contain this word? Or they might be simple mathematical operations. Multiply this number by this other number. The control structures in a language are used for decision-making. The word if to control how the program does different things under different conditions. For example, if the number of dollars in your bank account is less than the amount you want to take out from the ATM, well, then the ATM won't give you the money. But on the other hand, you might have arranged an overdraft, so the ATM will be programmed like this. If the amount you want is greater than the amount remaining, then say no, unless the account has an overdraft, in which case, if you're staying within your limit, you get your money. Computer languages also have to be able to handle information which comes into them from outside, or which is subject to change. These bits of information are called variables, for obvious reasons. The pin you put into your ATM is a variable. The ATM doesn't know in advance what you're going to put in. Your version of it is compared with the bank's version of it, and if they're the same, everything's fine. And if not, you get two more tries. All very straightforward. But what about bugs in programs? How do they occur? They may come because the information the program receives is unexpected. Say I wrote a very simple program which counted down to zero, like the way they count down for the launch of a rocket. You would tell me any starting number you liked, say 10, and my program would count down from that number until it reached zero, then stop. Simple enough. The program would count down from any number it was given, 10, 20, 100, or a million, stopping when it got to zero. But what if you gave it the number minus 1? It would go minus 2, minus 3, minus 4, and because it would never get to zero, the program would be stuck, counting down forever. A bug might also occur because a programmer hadn't understood the grammatical rules of the language itself. To check your account, the ATM has to connect to the bank's central computer. But sometimes there are problems. Maybe the lines are down, or the central computer is too busy. So the programmer might write, "Connect to the central computer or apologize," where apologize means to show the user a message explaining the problem. But what does the word "or" mean in that sentence? We know it's intended to mean try to connect to the central computer, and if you can't do that, apologize. But to the program, it might mean try to connect to the computer called central computer, and if you can't find that, connect to a second computer called Apologize. As there's no computer called Apologize, the ATM might lock up or wait 10 minutes for the non-existent computer to reply, and you definitely wouldn't get your apology. That kind of problem of ambiguity might be prevented by the language itself. It might enforce the use of brackets, for instance. You would have to write connect to, open brackets, central computer, close brackets, and that would resolve the ambiguity by making the relationship between the two alternatives more precise. There are thousands of computer languages in use, some highly specialized, some multipurpose, some written only as abstruse academic exercises, while others are intended to be easy to learn. Most of them are written in English, which is to say the names of their verbs are English words, though many computer languages aren't. Despite the fact that the number of words in the language is very small compared to the million or more words in English, the language itself isn't limited, because unlike with human languages, you can make up your own vocabulary on the spot. If I decide that there's a word abbreviationalize, which means to take the initial letters of two or more words and string them together into an abbreviation, I can't just start using it in a spoken language, because nobody knows what it means except me. But within the context of my computer program, I can do just that. I can write a little section in my program which finds first letters and strings them together. Then I can wrap that section up so that it responds to a specific word, and instantly, that word now exists and can be used. You can conceptualize a simple computer program as a series of instructions, so that in grammatical terms, the instructions are all imperatives. Do this, find that. And they're normally expressed, as in English, in the order subject, verb, object, except that there is no subject. The subject is the program itself, as if you were addressing the computer directly. As computer programs become more complicated, and as they need to talk to other programs or languages, you're more likely to want to use what's called object-oriented programming. This means that instead of simply giving the instructions to the computer program as if telling another person what to do, the program will first create a special kind of person and give them specific abilities, then give them the instructions. In object-oriented programming, there is a subject for the commands, because rather than just issuing the instruction to the program in general, a discrete section called an object has been created, and you're commanding that section. You can imagine the first, more straightforward kind of programming, procedural programming, as having a willing but ignorant person to help you. Say your command is, make me a cup of tea. You would have to ask them, find the kettle, then check if the kettle has water in it, then if there's no water, fill it up, then turn on the kettle, wait till it boils, check if we have tea bags, and so on. With object-oriented programming, rather than starting from scratch, you would have all of those skills available from a specialist helper, to whom you'd be able to say, tea maker, please make a cup of tea, and all of the tasks implied by that request could just be taken for granted. This approach is particularly useful when you have to create computer programs for other people to use. They may not have considered all the complexities and hazards of tea-making, but if you share your tea-making program with them, they can simply call on it and trust that you have foreseen them all. If the world of computer languages sounds dry and technical, I can only apologize. But the truth is that languages vary widely, and as with politics and religion, every language has its adherents and its detractors. If you spend any time on the parts of the internet where people discuss programming, you'll find that fierce arguments occur and insults fly. My language is the one true faith. Your language should never have been born. My language makes sense to any intelligent person. Your language looks like interference on the line. One reason for this is that programmers, as a rule, value precision and hate ambiguity. For many people who program computers for a living, the kind of ambiguity I talked about earlier shouldn't even be allowed to exist. A properly designed language should eliminate such problems altogether. Computer languages are a remnant in this way of the philosophical languages which thinkers concerned themselves with in previous centuries. They sought to create spoken and written languages in which it was impossible to lie, for instance, or to speak ambiguously. And some philosophers composed languages in which the meanings of words would be immediately evident even if one hadn't heard that word before. The syllable foo would start all words denoting animals, for instance, and the syllable ba would mean all animals with hooves, and the syllable baz would mean with humps. Therefore, a listener might never have heard the word foo ba baz, but they would immediately know that it signified a camel. As with the linguistic theory that the spoken language we learn shapes our ability to think, so it is often with computer programmers who believe strongly that one language, perhaps the first language they ever learned, or the ones their teacher spoke most highly of at university, is the natural and proper way to program, and that all other languages are poorly constructed or too forgiving. I'd like to talk about one language in particular, which is often hotly discussed, called Perl. Perl was invented by a man called Larry Wall, who was not a computer scientist, but a linguist with wide-ranging interests in chemistry, music, and evangelical Christianity. Perl has features directly intended to mimic natural human languages. For instance, different kinds of variable have signs at the start which tell the user whether it's a single item of data or a collection of items, thus mimicking markers like the S on the end of English words, which can tell us that the word is plural. Perl is also unique in having pronouns. It has special variables which are the equivalent of the English words it and them. So, for example, in English I can say, take every item of clothing out of that basket and hang it on the line. And in Perl you can do the same. In other languages, you would have to say something more long-winded, like, take every item of clothing out of that basket and hang the item of clothing you took from the basket on the line. Perl also includes extra words which purists would regard as unnecessary, so that it has if, as all languages must do, but it also includes unless, which is the opposite of if. Now, when a language has the word if and a way of writing not, you can simply combine the two and write if not. But the use of the word unless adds to the naturalness and readability of the language. Another feature is that rather than try and tie the language down and have there be only one way to do things, the Perl community actively adopts the motto, there's more than one way to do it. The syntax is flexible. Commands can be written with or without punctuation. Even the word for it can be left out altogether in a number of cases. The equivalent of, take each item of clothing from that basket, hang on the line. Not only is Perl relaxed when it comes to verbs, it's particularly relaxed when it comes to nouns. Many languages require you to list all the variables you're going to need before you start. And not only that, but once declared to be a number, your variable is not allowed to change from a number to a word, or even to acquire a decimal point. Perl allows you to create whichever variables you want when you want them, and they can change from numbers to words and back again as you wish. Purists are horrified by this approach, which can lead to errors, but many people relish the freedom and the speed of being able to program that way, the way they think. Perhaps because of its informal nature, Perl attracts programmers who have a light-hearted approach, and Perl textbooks and documentation often have a playful, jokey tone. Larry himself gives a public address once a year about developments with the language, which he calls the State of the Onion. At one of these events, he claimed, not entirely facetiously, that Perl was the first postmodern computer language. It's hard to say whether Perl has succeeded despite or because of its relaxed, easygoing nature. Even the purists can't deny it's one of the most successful languages there is. It has survived for over 20 years, quite unusual for a computer language, has been rewritten for almost every kind of computer in the world, and is still one of the cornerstones of the internet. Being pure, it seems, just isn't as much fun as being natural.
John Horner is an online developer of the ABC Radio National website, abc.net.au/rn. And I'm Maria Zylstra, here with Lingua Franca at the same time next and every week. Talk to you then.
Public hospitals in crisis have been said so many times and for so long that the urgency and substance of the message seems to have all but lost its impact.
Why are our public hospitals in crisis?
When Kevin Rudd declared he'd take over public hospitals, he gave a deadline of mid-2009.
Would a federal takeover of the hospital system help? A History of Public Hospitals. That's Rear Vision with me, Annabelle Quince. You can download or stream this program from the Radio National website.